side of the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway side. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Yeah, if you've got nothing to live for, nothing to lose, you've got the right place. You've got Motormouth Radio.
Oh, yes, we have nothing. We are the show with nothing to lose.
Except some good music, some good automotive advice, and entertainment.
Yeah, dance too, but you can't see that. So
that's right, with your hosts, Ray Guarino and his XO wingman, Joe D. Of course, we got Wes, Bruce, and Lang, my pool table consortiums on the musical vibe today, because I just had to do it. I threw that album on yesterday and said, oh, yeah, this sounds so great every time I listen to
it. They're on my list forever.
Of course. So you can give us a call for a little while at least at 516-572-7440.
And why is that, Ray?
Well, because we have a guest today, as is pretty much our usual fare. But this is one of our A-listers, not like any of them aren't, but this one certainly is, Mr. Steve Magnante. And you know Steve from TV. He's a Barrett Jackson commentator. But that was kind of like an afterthought, I think, in my realm of Steve. He's written for CarCraft and Hot Rod Magazine. He's built some altered wheelbase, match bass racers. People know him for a lot of his counterculture stuff. He's a car builder. He's a real guy, real car guy.
Yeah.
So we will be talking to him probably
on
after our first
many
break.
Levels.
Yeah. And so if you want to call us before that, get a quick one in at 516-572-7440. You can. After that, you're going to have to sit back and listen to Steve like we'll be doing, because that's kind of why we're here today.
Yeah, somebody like that talks, we listen. You should too.
Well, I like to keep...
Class.
Class. I like to keep in touch with Steve because he's always doing something different. He's always got things going on. And there's a little thing that he did that I want to talk to him about that was from one of his magazine articles that I thought was pretty poignant. So we're going to talk about that. And, we'll see. You know what? Conversations with our guests, as you know, always take a kind of an organic approach. It's like I tell people, when I have these people on the phone and they ask me, well, what are we going to talk about?
Well, we have a script, but we usually leave it in the car. So,
yeah.
In which case, then, it's just off the top of our heads.
That's what I said. I said, you know what? Just like this phone call, we went from A to C to B to W to Z. We kind of weave back and forth with,
that DWI check.
Yeah. Well, like just getting into the studio here, weaving through the serpentine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we do take a stream of consciousness type approach, which I think is, I think it works well for us because we tend to get the most, or we get a lot out of a guest that way.
Yeah, yeah, because we catch them off guard.
Yeah, well, there's that too, yeah, especially if we've done our homework.
Yeah, that little ninja suit that you have on there when you get ready to talk to somebody, that probably helps too.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
At least you stay speaking English because, you know, I'm really grateful for that because my Japanese sucks. So
no, your German is good though.
we
know that. That's a story for another time. If you're on our Twitter feed, in fact, you should, if you're on Twitter, just look up Motormouth Radio and follow us because we put out some, guest information and things about the show.
Right.
And there's one up there right now that we sent out that features Joe and his aforementioned German. So you may not know it's him.
My love of German cars.
Oh, yes, exactly. Well, that's it. People may not know the backstory. So hopefully, someone will look at that. Website, you can go to motormouthradio.net. Actually, .com may still be cooking, but .net is going to be is the new transfer for right now, and you can get information about the show and what we do on it, read some articles about things that we've talked about, and that's going to grow in the future, too. We're in a transition stage here, and we're always looking to move forward.
Yeah, because usually by the time we try to move backwards, we usually trip over something. So
that's right.
We're way better off trying to move forward. At least we can see what's in front of us.
Well, when you carry, the test lights in your pocket and the wires dangle, you're going to trip on something, right?
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but you get stabbed in some really sensitive places. Let me tell you, it's just true. Not fun.
You get that right.
But other than that, what kind of a week did you have? Did you break anything?
I didn't. We're still in wintertime, so there's really, not much going on. I do have... Well, we were out on Wednesday night, you and I. We were with the Mikes.
Yeah.
And we had to do a piece of business. We went to the UD, so Mike and Mike got to come to the UD and get a... got to give him a tour because I got to stick with the...
With the
boys.
With the residents, yes.
Right.
And, they find you a most entertaining guest. You see, they have a show. They just don't have any place to transmit it to yet.
Oh, so. They do.
Yeah, they after I see the next day or whatever, it's like, yeah, Ray's okay. He could live. So
thank you, boys. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're talking about carburetor work, and I actually got offered a table, like a table in residenture,
yes,
if you will.
That is a high honor. I mean, if they were willing to give you your own table in front of one of the cars that doesn't move.
It could have been a table like this. It could have been like a coffee table. But still, believe me, I take that. I understand fully the spirit of how that's intended.
Right. So in other words, if you don't have a parking spot, you still have a place in our our place,
which is cool. I mean, that's what any car guy, and I don't care if you're a car guy, a music guy, an art guy, no matter what your ilk is.
Yeah.
When you do get that kind of feedback from the guys who know and respect that are doing it, it's kind of nice because it means, hey, you know what? Yeah, I guess I am doing the right thing.
Like they said, you could live.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, we did, after the UD, we went out to, Jackson Hole.
Nice. Yeah, good diner.
I don't know about you, but I kind of didn't eat for most of the next day.
That pretty much sums it up. I was like,
Mika.
Maron, that was the size of my friggin' head. I was like, whoa.
But good. What a good burger. Oh, yeah.
That's always good to have a place like that in the neighborhood.
Yeah. My wife was saying she wanted to go up there, and but I'm thinking, yeah, maybe we can do it one day and like get a helicopter ride in and we can just land on the roof.
Yeah, right.
Parking is a bit.
Parking is not fun.
But after that, when we went our separate ways, I was coming back with the Mikes, and Mike at Celebrity Chase has this Chevelle project that he's been working on for about 2 years now, I guess.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
It's a 71. Yeah. It came completely apart. There was a lot more cancer in bad places than he thought.
Basket case / barn find.
Bad places. But they repaired it. They repaired it all. And it got to the point where, he did the suspension and got it as a rolling chassis again.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was hoping to do some. I did help him put the bushings in. I got to help him out with some of that, but I was actually I wanted to do that work. I wanted to put it back together, and Mike decided to do it himself, which is fine.
Sometimes that's therapy, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now he on the way home, he asked me if I would take the task of now getting the chassis running. And I said, okay, the engine's in, tranny's in, the fuel tank is in, and I just have to make sure that the distributor's in right and the carburation and the fuel. And
right.
So I'm going to go over there today after the show. I'm going to stop over at the shop and just take a look. I just want to take a head count, if you will, and see what's there, what I might need.
Yeah, survey the
I already threw in my car my big block Chevy distributor wrench, and I brought I know Mike Jr. is going to like to see this, my clips for my rocker arm clips. It's like, when you adjust valves and you put the clips on, the oil deflector clips, I brought a set of those.
Those will always come in handy.
Yeah. Especially like when you rev the engine and they fly off.
Oh, yeah, those are always good. That's where you should be wearing safety glasses.
Absolutely. Very good catch, see? Joe. Very good. Yes.
Whether you don't want that stuff in your eyes or you don't want to get a clip in your eye.
Right.
And if you do enough of the same engine, I know I have for small blocks because that was my main car. I used to cut out a valve cover. Yeah, elephant junk motor.
I have one of those hanging on a nail in my garage.
Right. Yeah. Because that's actually the bomb there, because you just slap that on there and just expose the...
Before you did that, what was the method? What did you use because there was one other thing that a lot of guys used, myself included. This is going way back. It was a real cheap and dirty method, something that everybody had laying around. Did you? Did you just let it go over the fenders like some of my friends did?
No, I couldn't do that. No, but I assume you're talking about Reynolds tinfoil era.
Close. Yeah. We used to use a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
Just take a cardboard. Well, usually it said Budweiser on the other side.
Yeah.
Because that's what was laying around.
Right.
But you cut a piece of cardboard, shove it in the.
Okay, mine said Coors.
Yeah. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Shove it in the head.
Yeah.
So that basically the oil coming off of the rocker
would just get deflected,
would hit that and then you had this, rotten, sodden piece of oil-soaked cardboard. But, that was the cheap and
dirty
method.
Which is really good if you had two of them. You could have races across the garage floor.
Right.
You know what I mean? But then my mother get really, why does the back of your pants look like this, Joseph?
Exactly.
Sorry, Ma. But, I had to run the guy, but my car wasn't ready, so I had to use my butt and cardboard.
Exactly.
But, adjusting valves is important. That's one of the things. Was that motor disassembled?
This is what's got me scared a little bit. The previous owner said he had the motor gone over and rebuilt to something. Now, Mike said he pulled the oil pan and did, I forget what he did, if it was a rear main seal or a gasket, whatever. He pulled the pan for some reason and said everything in there looked good.
Okay.
So, but never seen it, you don't know, so you don't, you have to trust.
Assuming sometimes could be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, trust but verify.
Sure. Yes.
And that's where I'm going with the valves. I want to make sure everything is right there, so.
Yeah, I mean, if you crank the thing up and it sounds like a Led Zeppelin drum solo, I mean, now you got work to do.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Oil pressure. That kind of thing. You gotta leave the distributor in place, or are you gonna pull it out? You're gonna prime it? What are you gonna do?
I think I have to put it in.
Okay, so that it might be a good opportunity to prime the thing.
Yeah, exactly. Get oil pressure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know if there's oil in the engine right now. I don't know what's what. So.
Yeah, basically something like that, you assume nothing. Because somebody might have had the best intentions. Oh, yeah, I did this, I did that. And you go to crank it over, it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot to put the oil in. I had to run down to the store, but I got deterred or something. And next thing you know, you're trying to start the thing up dry.
Exactly.
You know?
So there's all those pre-checks. I'm kind of making lists. And you've done it 100 times. But it's always good to just have it written down so you get a mental floor plan in your mind, or mental blueprint.
Right. Yeah. You need a map. Because something like that, you have to remain somewhat organized. I mean, unless you're doing it every day. You know what I mean? Like, say, in the course of, that's your regular day job.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to forget something.
Actually, the good thing is, having done it so many times on different cars through our lives,
It's in your head.
Once you stand there in front of it, you know what you got to do. It's just a matter of, what am I going to do first?
Right.
Am I going to put the radiator in first? Am I going to do the distributor? What am I going to do? Pull the plugs? Whatever it is.
Exactly.
But, once your brain engages your hands and you start doing stuff, then the order finds itself.
Mm.
And everybody works in different patterns, so.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, stuff like that, you just don't want to forget nothing, because most of this stuff is more or less critical.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, we're flashing. Wow. So, it looks like either somebody wants to critique us, or maybe it's Steve.
I don't know. Let's go to the phones and see. We'll take a leap of faith and say, we'll go to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, guys, it's Al from Albertson. Haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Hey.
Al, you got to make it real quick. We got to take a break, and we got a guest coming on. What's happening?
I just wanted to say hello. Looking forward to the spring, getting the Interceptor out and getting her going again. And
all right, that's
spent a lot of time in the hospital in December, so I haven't had a chance to do much.
Right.
Always good to get back on the road. Yeah, we're all waiting for spring to come, Al, but so far, no good.
Yeah, well...
That groundhog, when will I get my hands on him?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, one did, one there, who knows? I don't know, don't put too much faith in rodents.
Yeah, that's true. They eat wires, they leave little pellets, but other than that, they're really not good weather predictors, I find.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Unless one walks in and he's got snow on it, it's like, okay, yeah, it's snowing outside.
But I decided what I need to do is move to, like, Arizona somewhere where it's warm all the time and you can work on a car year-round.
Absolutely.
Sure.
You got to buy a big house with a heated garage. That's why I need a one-room log cabin with a 10-car garage.
There you go.
But
indoor plumbing, maybe.
Yeah.
Outhouse is good enough. I worked for 100 years, right?
Yeah. Why not?
But
all right, Al. Well, we look forward to seeing you in the spring at the events around town, and
Hopefully, and to you, buddy, good luck with the Chevelle project. Always nice to see another old muscle car back on the road.
You'll see it up at the AutoZam. It'll be there.
Well, hopefully the AutoZam will still be there.
Yes, exactly. So we're so far it is, so far we hope that'll remain. So.
And do you guys know if there's going to be an Eisenhower Park cruise to the show this year or not?
I would say unequivocally no, because that was Ed Mangano's baby, and since he's no longer the county supervisor.
Yeah, well, now this one seems to be bound and determined to get rid of everything that he even touched.
Well, I mean, that's politics. So I would say I haven't heard or seen anything that said that in writing, but I would imagine that that show has run its course.
But if they don't do the cruise, at least maybe they'll have the show, because that was a big draw, that show.
You know what? Get in touch with the county executive's office and ask them.
Yeah, let them know. You know, yeah. That,
and then you let us know.
Everybody out there, let them know that there is an interest out there.
Right.
Anybody who, car guy or not, if you just were taking your kids to the park on that particular day.
Sure.
Well, that's, you see, 500 plus cars pulling in, you got to think, hey, something's going big going on here.
That's what I think, Al. If you or if any got people in car clubs want to see the show continue, write to the county executive. There's a public relations director. I don't know who that is now. I knew who it was. I don't know who it is under the new administration. And make the case. And make, you know what? If it makes money, they're going to look at it. They're definitely going to look at it if it makes money. And if they say no, it's done, well, then no, it's done. What are you going to do?
And what was it like? $15, $20 a car, $25 a car entry fee.
I mean, that
money had to go to the county, went somewhere.
Exactly. Yes, it did.
So, we can hope.
All right. Well, check it out. If you get any information, let us know. And if we find out, we will certainly report it.
Of course. We'll keep
definitely,
our ears open.
Guys.
Okay, Al. Thanks.
Have a good one.
All right,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Yes. With that, we're going to take a break, Joe, and then hopefully we'll be back with Mr. Steve Magnante. So keep it what you got at Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Joe D, and we'll be back in a flash.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said the Motor Mouth thing.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Petrowski, better known in WHPC circles as New York Polka Bob. Maybe you're trying to get back to your roots, or maybe you're just tired of the same old top 40 songs. If you're looking for something new, something different, something to help you forget your troubles for a moment, then maybe the Polka Beat Ukrainian Melody Time is the place for you. Polka Bob every Monday night at 8 p.m. bringing you the best in polkas, Ukrainian melodies from yesterday and today. Maybe you'll hear something your grandma used to sing, or maybe you'll hear something that's a pop tune that's gone polka style. That's Polka Beat, every Monday night at 8 p.m., the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC. Also available on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we are back with on Motormouth Radio, and I got to do a quick little intro here. Let's see if he's coming in the parking lot.
Mopar, no car.
Oh, yeah. On the phone with us, Mr. Steve Magnante. Steve, you're with us.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah. Hey, great to be here, guys.
All right. We rode you in on a Mopar train. I hope you don't mind.
That's cool with me. I love them all, but Mopar is my core.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Well, it's great to have you back on again with us on Motormouth Radio. You know we've had you on before. You're one of our A-list guests that people just love to hear what you have to say. So, here we go again.
Well, thanks. You know, the funny thing is, I love everything about cars except one thing. They don't talk. So, it's up to somebody to give them a voice, and I do my best to be accurate whenever I speak for cars, whether it's on Barrett Jackson or in the magazines I write for or for Junkyard Gold or any of the books I do.
Oh, absolutely. And you are one of the most trusted authorities, at least in these parts. You know, people love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, you know, well, it's a funny thing. You know, preparation, a little preparation goes a long way. You know, there's nothing worse than going on live television and then, you know, having a 65 GTO come up with a three-speed manual and then wondering if it's a factory installation or if somebody shortcutted the car at some point in its life. You know, right. Some folks would assume a GTO couldn't be had with a three-speed manual, but you could.
That was the standard transmission.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. But yeah, just a little preparation goes a long way. And the funny thing is, on Barrett Jackson, I've been doing that for, 14 years now.
Wow.
But I often have a little notepad in my left hand. And that's my cue to keep me on point. And I make a note for every car we're on the air for. Someday I'll put these things on eBay or give them to the Smithsonian or something. But I've got a huge basket full of them because every day of every show, I create a pad just for that day with all the cars in it. So, you know, I have a sense of what's coming up next and I can jump on it instead of saying, boy, I wish I'd have said, you know, after the car sells, you know.
Right.
I remember asking you that precise question a number of years ago when we had you on. And you explained it the same way, which I thought was fantastic. It's a very professional way of doing it. The other thing we spoke about a year or two ago was you had been using a little camera that I don't see you using anymore. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, the show itself has been through a few different, not owners, but, you know, we used to be on Speed Vision, Speed Channel, Fox Sports,
right.
and now, of course, you know, we're on Velocity Channel, but each of them had different ways of going about it, and early on, there was a thing called the Vindicator, as in VIN number, you know, Vindicate, and that was a little tiny, like a firecracker-sized mini camera, and so, indeed, that was part of earlier, maybe 6 years ago, something like that was the last time we used it, but it was a neat way, you know, of bringing viewers a first-hand look at the tiny little number that a big camera can't begin to get. The only downside to that, well, it was two sides, was the fact that that little camera required a crew of two people to run the cable and be on standby when I wanted to use it. And the thing is, you know, those guys took up space on the stage, and, you know, in some cases it was a thing where the car's starting to move and I'm trying to point out this thing and the auctioneer's saying, okay, move the car, and it got kind of and the other side of the coin was the Blair Witch effect, where sometimes, because I didn't really have a sense of you know, what was being broadcast, so sometimes I'd be either off frame or wiggling the camera too much, and a little camera like that, little tiny movement, it'll jar. So those two things kind of.
Oh yeah, I remember thinking to myself, maybe I better put the beard down watching.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but it was, you know, as a viewer, it was very good because it did give you that up close, and there was a light on that thing, so you could see little details that you couldn't see otherwise in a dark engine compartment or under. And I know the guys that always ribbed you. Yeah, Steve's rolling under the car again. He's going to look at the rear end because he loves those rear ends.
That's right. And it's a funny thing. It may come back, but at this point in time, we try to make up for it with the chassis cam, which gives a nice view of the underside of the car.
Right.
And that's something that I love, you know, and again, you know, to some folks, you know, a nice shiny paint, good enough, but there's so much more to every car, and I always say the car shines from the inside out, and in some cases, the underside of the car, in most cases, is more important than the top side, because that's where all, you know, suspension, drivetrain, exhaust, all the stuff that really keeps the car off the road, literally, is found. So I love being able to show that stuff off with the chassis cam. That comes in handy.
And that's the thing, Steve, you know, when you're talking to us, you're talking to the guys, that's where we live, you know, and like, I know,
yeah,
you know, with my own cars, you know who the other car guys are, because I do this all the time, and then you see other people do it. A guy will look at your car and then just drop to his knees and roll underneath. Like, I do that all the time. Like, I want to see what's under there. And, you know, you're in a parking lot, or, you know, there's a puddle, and like, yeah, he's hardcore. He wants to see, you know, he's looking at the real deal. He's not looking at the,
right.
You know, how's the shine? Well, it's not shined. It's primer, you know? So,
right.
You know? So,
yeah, look at them sway bars. Yeah. So, yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's 12 bolt. And rear axles, too, of course. You know, the party's over if the axle blows up or disintegrates when you punch the gas. And I'm always on the lookout for, you know, sometimes you get, you know, hot rods and customs where people put like a 502 rat motor and a stick shift in front of the stock 10 bolt the car came with when it was a 6 older car. And of course, if you dump that clutch with any kind of traction, well, you're walking home.
I actually caught that in the last Barrett Jackson. There was a car, I don't remember the particular car, and you said just that. You said, well, you went from front to back and said, well, I see the stock, you know, the Salisbury, the 8.5 inch. The 10 bolt, and you know, and you kind of very judiciously and politically let it ride, like, that was the owner's choice. Maybe he's not going to drive it too hard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it is true. You know, we're not the sales prevention department by any stretch.
Right.
Certainly, you know, don't want to insult the car or
right.
anybody involved, but just, you know, pointing out things that, could be improved upon, I guess, is
yeah.
part of the picture. You know, but we try to accentuate the positive, of course, you know.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen, in the 14 years now that you've been doing this, have you seen trends or changes in the cars that come across that block?
Well, you know, beyond the obvious of you know, brand new Chargers, Challengers, Mustangs, Camaros that you know, are brand new mm-hmm. muscle cars that really outperform anything from the past. I mean, it's amazing. The new Dodge Demon does a wheelie from the factory. You know what I mean?
Yeah, how cool is that, right?
Yeah, when I started, I guess, well, the 4.6 Mustang was kind of coming on. The LS Camaro and Firebird and Corvette, of course, were entrenched and on their way toward stardom.
Right.
But yeah, it's a thing where, you know, it's wonderful to see the modern showroom cars being instant collectibles. I have to say that in some cases, in fact, it's a situation where the Ford Boss 302, when it came out 4 years ago or so, there's a book done by Donald Farr all about the Boss 302, new and old. And actually, the guys at Ford, some of the engineers said, hey, you know what? This thing's going to wind up on the auction block at some point. We got to paint that axle black instead of the normal untouched rust.
Right.
So, strangely enough, the Barrett Jackson broadcast has affected the way new cars are built. Case in point, the Boss 302, the new one, has a painted axle because one of the engineers thought, you know, we better make this thing pretty in case the chassis cam.
That's great.
It's true.
That's great.
We've actually shown a few Bosses, and I've pointed that out. And so it's kind of fun to be part of a circle, you know, the whole thing.
Now, what about the other cars, you know, the regular cars that people bring in, street rods and muscle cars? You know, we've all seen kind of trends that we think we see, but you see it much closer. What's your take on how that's changed over the years?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. Light trucks, bone stock, half-ton, short bed pickup trucks, two-wheel, those things are bringing on some real money, and I kind of get it. You know, the funny thing is, you know, trucks, well, they remind people of work, I suppose, and maybe something you don't want to remember when you're, you know, trying to enjoy your car. But at the same time, you know, if enough years pass, you know, the recollection of an old Bronco, but one that's presented nicely in stock, you know, people are ready to pay money for that experience. And everywhere they go with that truck, they will bring that same recognition with spectators and people, and they'll have an instant conversation. And it's a great thing. So, you know, I guess what we're seeing is, you know, they don't have to be fast or really powerful or exotic looking to have value with people. So case in point is, you know, the pickup truck trend. Toyota FJs are coming on, and CJ Jeeps, of course, bone stock. And it's funny, there's two ways to go with it. Bone stock, you know, right down to the little hubcaps and radio delete, can bring as much money as a full-on resto mod.
Wow.
But it's but yeah, so trucks are a definite an emerging trend that I wouldn't have seen that coming, to be honest.
I have to say with the emergence of companies like LMC, now you can do a resto on a truck where before you had to do a restification or a resto mod because the original parts weren't available.
Yeah, it's a great time we're living in right now. You know, I often say that the good old days are right now.
Yeah.
You know, because we have access to the reproduction metal, and it's not close, but it's exact in many cases. Is blueprint replicas of, well, even Camaro bodies, Mustang bodies, pickup truck cabs and fenders, and, you know, 32 Fords are being gunned again in steel, stuff that we dreamt about in the 70s and early 80s. So
yeah,
we're in a good
bodies.
Place.
You know, Steve, here's the bigger question, and whenever car guys get around, this usually comes up, and not to seem kind of fateful or whatever, but what do you know, how long do you think this can actually go on? Like, guys of our generation, and there's some guys younger than us, certainly guys a lot older than us, that are keeping the flame, but you know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see it kind of burning out with the guys who are now in their, you know, teens and 20s, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I'm 54. I was born in 1964, so, you know, I guess I'm on the caboose of the baby boom train. I see a lot of folks in their late 20s who I ordinarily would not have thought as being car people, but I think it's coming around.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in good shape, as long as, you know, 27 to 127 seems to be the age group. You know, now, younger folks, you know, I mean, it's true, people are living at home a little longer than they used to, and, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe inheriting mom or dad's truck or car. And I guess they're talking to, you know, the trend is that fewer people are driving and getting their license, and they're not chomping at the bit to get their learner's permit, but rather will take more time to get it. But I think once they're established, or once they have, you know, their things in place, pretty much, you know, a lot of people will find themselves attracted to cars, and maybe it just starts a little later, I think, maybe in the average person's life now. If you're inclined to it, it'll hit you. But it's just a little later on because, well, the price of entry, I guess, in some cases to, you know, get a collector. But the good news, too, is that there are so many brand new cars. Like, you know, ever since 05, you know, the Mustang, that version of Mustang, pretty much a very compelling car, and you don't have to, you know, break the bank to buy a V6 or even a, you know, 4.6 GT or even a 5-liter Coyote. They will eventually trickle down into high school parking lots. I mean, that's for sure. They made so many of them, which is great.
Some kid's going to inherit one from his dad or something like that, older brother.
You know, I just talked to a guy about this the other day, and I said back when we were younger, the Model A's and Model T's were the vaulted cars. You couldn't touch those. But now those guys that owned them from back then, they're in their 80s and 90s. You could pick up a cherry Model A for under 10 grand.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah, I mean, the it's good and bad. The good is that, you know, it allows people who, you know, couldn't otherwise have afforded a collector car, quote unquote, can now do it. The downside is that, you know, those cars, unfortunately, they're not so good for everyday driving on, like, the highway. You know, puttering to and from the car show, sure, but they're not, you know, 70-mile-an-hour cruise mobiles where, you know, getting to and from the show, you better take surface streets because, well, you can't run a Model A out at 70 miles an hour without, well, you can't.
Right.
You know, so that's the downside. But I think post-World War II, most any collector car is something that can be driven on the highway for, you know, an hour at 70 miles an hour. So so those cars, especially four doors and wagons of the 50s generation cars, those can be found, you know, for and you know, being able to afford these cars, of course, opens the door to ownership, and that's the key to this thing going forward. I think we're in good shape.
Yeah. The other part of my Model A thought was like, okay, you can get one from the I've seen them at swap meets for, like, you know, $8,000-$7,000. And then the next thing is, but who wants them? Like, I don't want an original Model A. That's never been my deal. I want a chopped and, you know, I want a hot rod. That I'd take. But, you know, so that's the thing. Now, the muscle cars are going to be, you know, the 50s cars, of course, will be next in line, and the muscle cars are the 60s and 70s. And right now, you know, we had people on the show many years ago, the Exceeding Limits Truck Club, and they're all a bunch of young guys, and they built trucks. But, Steve, these guys were down and dirty. They were doing body drops and chassis drops, where they would drop the Sonoma, say, on the ground, and they had a clearance to hood so the engine could come through, literally, you know? And we asked them, well, why aren't you guys building cars? And they said, they looked at us and said, you guys have all the muscle cars and you ain't selling them.
Right.
And they were right. They said, we can't get a crappy Nova, you know, for under $18,000.
Like, well, that's usually how the next generation of collectors evolves. It's like you can't, the hot car of the day brings top dollar. You can't swing it, but then somebody has something, the next generation, the next body style up, let's say, or something. Some good attribute of it, you know, whether it's used the drivetrain that you want or whatever. So people start latching on to them, you know, and then next thing you know, that one comes up in value.
Yeah.
I think generally, you know, the golden rule has been that we collect things that we either wanted or had as younger people,
right.
And now, you know, 20 years later, we can afford, you know, either the first ownership or the second ownership of it. But it is true, you know, that modifying a lot of those old vehicles. I mean, I understand a Model A. It's kind of sad to see a nice old clean car get not chopped up. But the reality is, in stock trim, it's not much use except for puttering to and from.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, there's enough to go around for the most part. Oh, by the way, if you guys hear a cat in the background. It's a little story. That's my cat, Cookies, who, if you remember Hot Rod Magazine, Gray Baskerville was one of the legends there from 68.
Yeah. Sure.
And, well, Gray gave me this cat's mom.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you hear a cat in the background, it's Gray Baskerville's grand kitten.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. Of course, Gray is an icon in the industry, known for his, you know, for his hot rod. It was a 32, I do believe.
Red car.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that car went through many iterations. Went through Hot Rod Magazine for generations. And where is that car now? I know someone has it. Where is it now, Steve?
Well, I know that, you know, after he passed, it was sold to, I think, one of the folks from Prime Media bought it. I think the editor of one of the street rod magazines bought it. I think it's still in his hands.
Okay.
But that car, I remember, I worked at Hot Rod Magazine from 1997 through 04, and Gray was on staff at the same time, and it was wonderful to work with him. But he was pretty down to earth, and he drove that all the way from L.A. to the Oakland Roadster show.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let him in because they had primer on one of the fenders. I think the left rear fender.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
oh,
so
pardon me.
Yeah. So forever, hopefully that primer spot will remain. But
yes.
Gray was a pretty pretty function over form kind of guy. But his writing style was all about alliteration. Prime Pinto Pony, Powerhouse.
But a great writer. A lot of those articles back in the day.
I actually kind of
old dad.
I actually kind of stole that when I threw out a Twitter blast for you and I called you the custom car. Custom kitsch car with all K's. I don't know. Let me just throw that out and see. Again, because it just comes to mind when you're in that when you think like that, you kind of remember things. Whatever. And I think of Graham always with the big the sun hat and the flip flops and a Hawaiian shirt out with like three cameras and on the salt flats or something. But
right.
Of course, never having met him, that was never had that opportunity. But we certainly knew him.
Bad thing about New York, we don't get to see so many of those guys over this direction.
You knew him through the magazine, yeah. Speaking of older cars, Steve, what's in your stable these days?
Well, I thinned the herd. I did sell my Rampage altered wheelbase Dart at the Barrett Jackson last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the only altered wheelbase I have right now is an 81 Ford Fairmont, believe it or not.
Yes.
A two-door post.
Great car.
It has a 4.6 camera motor with 8-stack injection, 5-speed.
Yes.
So that's the only old one. Well, 63 Dart, which is kind of on deck for funification. But the daily driver is a GMC Sonoma, like a little S10, with an LS motor under the hood.
Sweet.
And so it's pretty quick. It looks bone stock, very functional. But that's my little my daily driver here in the winter in Massachusetts.
Yeah,
a couple cement blocks in the back, and it gets traction. But in the summer, it's a good little tire smoker.
Yeah, with the Fairmount, I love that car. And I remember when you first purchased it, you were driving around. It was L.A., right? You were driving around California.
Well, that's right, yeah. The funny thing is, now the Fairmounts, a lot of folks, you got to remember, it's the bones of the 5-liter Mustang.
It's a Fox body, yeah.
Yeah, it came out a year before, actually, 78, and of course, 79, the Fox Mustang is announced. But, there's two kinds of two-door. There's the Futura, which has that sort of, slanted B-pillar. But mm-hmm. It took me about a year in L.A. to find a two-door sedan, a post car,
right,
with a full door frame.
Yeah.
And so this car is kind of a what-if the AFX funny car thing had continued into the 80s and 90s. So it's basically a modern take on a 65 funny car. Some people get it.
Yeah.
Most don't.
Oh, yeah,
but it's fun.
Oh, I love it. I know you'd sent me some early pictures when you had it in the garage. You still had the Wilshire Shaker at the time. And,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that car went to Chicago. And I realized you can't drive them all at the same time. So it's fun to thin the herd. And plus, that provides funds to build the next one.
Very true. Very true. So that's good. I'm glad to hear you have that. Because that's actually, I'm not even a Ford guy, but that's one of my favorites because it's such an oddball.
Yeah.
You know, it's
back in like the early to mid 90s. Like I had a custom with one of those cars,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to remember the circumstances why he had to get rid of it. He was an older gentleman, and one of my Ford nuts came by the shop, and he's like, "You getting rid of this thing?" And he goes, "I go, yeah, it's a good little car. It's a 4-cylinder. You can get you around." He goes, "No, no, no. I want to drop a Mustang drivetrain in it. I want to drop a 5-liter in this thing so bad."
Yeah.
And sure enough, that thing went. That's the direction it went.
Nice.
Yeah. It's kind of like Novas were always early, like ugly early first generation.
It was like finding like a 78, 79 2-door Malibu.
Right.
Right. One of those. That was
sleeper.
Cool.
Put an LS in there, and what a great little sleeper car.
Nobody knows nothing.
Exactly. Cool looking car. In fact, I got gas this morning early, and on the parts store by my house, I saw the back of a Malibu, and I'm like, oh, don't tell me. And I came around, it's a 4-door. Somebody had this old 70s Malibu out, which was kind of cool. So, Steve, going from the real cars, let's go back to...
Yeah, talk about altered wheelbases and stuff.
Yeah, your other hobby is making... I got a copy here. The altered wheelbase models, there's an article in the March 2018 CarCraft magazine that got my attention called Funny Car Folk Art.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, altered wheelbase funny car models were a thing in the 60s, and they're kind of coming back. But I mean, you can chop and slice the wheelbase on a full size car or a plastic one. But it was amazing that John McGann at CarCraft, he's the editor. Hats off to him for being brave and giving a full 5 pages to CarCraft to a plastic model car story, which is very cool. Now keep in mind, back in the 60s, model cars were a part of the CarCraft editorial package every month, but it was cool. So. But it's a five-pager. Basically, you're rounding up the idea that you don't have to have pretty paint and stuff. And just, you don't even paint the model. Sometimes just, you know, slicing, dicing, and having fun with it. And so, yeah, good eye. That was a fun story to write.
I tell you, I saw it, and I said, oh, great, Steve got a model story. And when I saw how long it went, I was like, this is fantastic. Five pages in CarCraft. But, you know, you definitely
gave me flashbacks.
You definitely have the Ginsu knife of Exactos. Boy, you talk about slicing and dicing. You have this down to a... You could do this in your sleep, I'm sure.
Right. I mean, it's simpler than, you know, than a lot of folks might be afraid. But the punchline is, a lot of guys, whether it's plastic models or the real thing, you know, get bogged down in the details, trying to make it pretty. Now, this is not an excuse, you know, for being a butcher. But, you know, if you free yourself from the idea that it has to have perfect paint and be flawless, you get a lot done. You really do.
It kind of sounds like the cars I drive on the street.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Yeah, now, I think I don't know if it was in that article or somewhere else, you'd said that sometimes at Barrett Jackson, when you have downtime in a hotel room, you'll break out a model kit and just have at it. Is that correct?
Yeah. Just basically, you know, bring some glue and put a model together. It's like reading a book, same thing. And, you know, whenever I can at Barrett Jackson, too, if there's like a Bronco or whatever it might be, if there's a plastic kit that's been done of it, I'll quite often, hey, by the way, if you don't have one of the funds for a real one, you can always pick up the Revell 125th scale kit or the Johann or MPC or AMT. And, you know, because a lot of folks, I mean, a lot of the guys who design real cars today absolutely were kids building plastic model kits. And that's how it started. For me, certainly. I bet you guys, too.
Oh, yeah. My habit started there.
Yeah.
You know, car design, you know, in the models, you know, bicycles for learning how to wrench. But, yeah, I mean, I'm once section in picture number 8, that 64 Fairlane. Yep. Got one of those. Chopped it up pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
In white.
Steve, I confessed to Joe that I have a stock. I have a bunch of model kits that are brand new. I've never built them. Rainy day thing. But I did confess to being at a swap meet and actually buying old models, stuff that's already been built. And like, yeah, I'll take that for $2. You know what? Yeah, this is a GTO model. Or, hey, here's something that's got like a big block Chevy. Or like you mentioned, you look for those special parts. Like, oh, it's got an I-beam. Or, oh, it's got a set like of like replica brands on. Yeah, I'll give you $1 for that, sure.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, just buying old model kits and reworking them. And then RAM tubes, that's always a tough thing to find. And AMT's 72 Blazer has a great set of Hillborn-style RAM tubes. If you're ever looking for them, that's where to go. Otherwise, it used to be the go-to was the Johann Holland Hearse, which was a hearse, believe it or not, with two injected Hemis in it. Great model, but $200 today. But at least in that case, you got 16 stacks, so you got two engines worth. But now, the re-release of the Blazer has solved that problem. So
absolutely. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Have you gotten any other feedback on that? I don't know if you get feedback through the magazine stuff.
Yeah,
or not.
There is. Yeah, most people understood it and dug it. Yeah, maybe one or two people says, I don't build models anymore. But at the same time, lots and lots. In fact, Mark Trostel, who is one of the head designers of like Viper and Challenger, he chimed in saying that it rang a bell with him because he got his start building plastic kits. So the guy who designed Viper saw that car. And he didn't design a whole Viper, but had a hand in it. So it's wonderful to get feedback like that.
I have to say that almost every car guy's garage or man cave or office I go into, there's a model or models someplace.
On some level, whether it's one of those die-cast kits.
Could be a die-cast, but a lot of times you'll see all different iterations of stuff. Yeah, it's kind of like, and I hope that continues to go too. Model kits now I see, some of them like $20. I look whenever I'm in the craft store, I look, I'm like, $20 for a Camaro? Jeez, come on, man. That's like I'm still thinking that's an $8 kit. But I still think Quadrajet rebuilding kit should be $12, so,
we had that talk.
We did. That's a different therapy, anyway.
That's the shipping on them these days.
I know. Yeah. But
Can I tell you about Junkyard Gold?
Absolutely, please do. Yes,
we were waiting.
Well, actually, just got home 2 days ago from a trip out to, and see, I'm in Massachusetts right now. Mm-hmm. I lived in L.A. for 16 years, but moved back here 9 years ago to Mass, where I grew up. But anyway, there's a thing called Motor Trend On Demand, which is a subscription service where people sign up and they get access to 12 automotive shows, from Roadkill to Heads Up and all these different shows. But we just added one called Junkyard Gold, and it's a show where I basically tour the country and hit junkyards in search of just that. And we were up in Vancouver at a place called All American Classics and found some really, really cool stuff. We haven't produced the show yet, but I'll hint. 79 Trans Am 10th anniversary.
Oh, really?
In a mud hole. The irony is, you know, on a lot of these cars, you know, I think it's just as fascinating to find the Hemi Cuda in a junkyard as it is, you know, on the show field. And so that's kind of the backbone of the show, just showing shocking examples of
what you could find still in there,
Sure. And in previous shows, like the episode that's airing right now on Motor Trend On Demand, there's a 70 Chrysler 300 Hurst convertible, or one that looks just like. Because remember, there was only 502 of those things built, and there was two convertibles. Did we find the third one? Question mark. Turns out we did not. It was a well-done clone, but the thing was built back in the 80s because it was just so aged and so convincing. But everything was there. But the thrill of discovery is a big part. But,
oh, sure.
That's Junkyard Gold.
That is great, and we wish you a lot of success, as well as with your books. You know, I know you have the 1001 series of Corvette, Mustang, and Muscle Car Facts, and
I don't know... That book is on my desk for downtime at work.
I don't know how you research all of that, because, I mean, 1001 sounds like, oh, yeah, 1001, until you read that book and say, God, where'd this come from?
And I know what you're saying. I mean, I've done three of those, and in fact, that's CarTech Publishing. They're out of the Midwest.
I have to say, yes. The special sales and marketing rep is Steve Dobenspec. I think that's how you say his name. He's who feeds me with the books that I get to review and read, and we thank them for that, because CarTech has been a great adjunct to the show. But yeah, Steve, tell us, how do you find that information and compile it?
Well, it's funny. I've done three. The first one was 1001 Muscle Car Facts. Second was 1001 Mustang. And now the third one, just about to hit, is 1001 Corvette Facts. And the crazy thing is, it's what to leave out. That's the problem I have with these. Now, each one, they give you about a year. This one I did in 7 months, believe it or not, but got it done. And I break it down into various sub-chapters where, you know, we cover things like body and chassis, engine and drivetrain, legend and lore, statistics. So when you break it down, it's like back in high school. Remember, you had to do an outline before you did the paper. So a little bit of organization beforehand. So it's not too bad, but it is true. At around, you know, 633, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, how many more to go?
And you do pull out some really neat little factoids, the stuff that's hidden in the cracks. It's amazing.
Yeah, I try to, you know, just give people, I didn't know that, and if that's the end. And each one kind of stands alone, so you don't have to necessarily, you know, have access to the entire book. The idea is that you can sort of open the book, put your finger on any given one, and say, oh, that's cool.
So, done that.
I have to tell you, Steve, I don't know if you're aware of how popular that format is, but I was fooled, because on my shelf, I have, you know, I put the books on a bookshelf, and I went to pull out, I wanted to see what I had of yours, if they sent me the Corvette or the Mustang. I have the Mustang book. But I saw others. I'm like, wait a minute, aren't these Steve's? No, I have 1001 NASCAR Facts and 1001 Harley-Davidson Facts.
Yeah.
Done by other people, but with the same type of cover. I mean, you know, flattery is the best form of copy.
Serious form, imitation, serious.
Thank you.
Serious form of flattery,
And I said, these aren't Steve's books. Holy crap. So, yeah, I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but, that's you're being copied already, which is great.
Yeah, that's good. That's all by design. It's CarTech, and they're out of Forest Lake, Minnesota.
Right.
And indeed, they did ask me, do you want to do these? I said, well, I don't know much about Harleys. So, but in fact, right now, I think there are a couple. They're doing Jeep CJs and Beetles. So those are,
wow.
1001. So I don't have a lock on the thing by any stretch, but it's nice to just get the information out. But the crazy thing is, again, it's what to leave out. With almost everything, it's what to leave out, because you know, if you get somebody wound up on this stuff, you can just keep going and going, and you have to eventually you get to the end of the page.
Oh, yeah. Now, I have a couple of guys who are Corvette restorers, private restorers, and when they talk to me about stuff that they get into, I mean, literally the minutia, the glove box screws and the tan. I'm like, oh my god!
That chalk mark belongs here.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the two things in the Corvette world that I found most fascinating was the fact that in 1955, when the V8 arrived finally, there were a handful of cars that were built out with six-cylinder engines.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, those frames are unique. They have 6-volt charging systems, whereas all of V8 cars have 12.
Mm-hmm,
so little weird things like that. Even the radio was specific to a 6-volt 1955 Corvette.
Wow.
And of course, a decade later in 65, when the disc brakes became standard,
sure,
a handful of people went for the drums.
Right.
They kept the drums, got a small credit. So just weird stuff like that. And the most well, not depressing, but, you know, when I wrote the all the chapters, I broke them down into the C1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera. And in 1980, you could get a 305 in a Corvette, a little 305.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you get a credit, and that was California only, but you know, it wasn't always pretty, but, but you know, sometimes history, you got to take the good with the not-so-good.
Right, right. To get the car, you got to get that motor, and that's it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Well, Steve, listen, we thank you for coming on with us. It's been great as always. The time went too fast.
That flew.
Well, we're gonna have to get you back. I love to keep you in rotation because you're such a great guy to talk to. You know, it's
not too much. Otherwise, he gets dizzy.
Yeah. The rotation thing. I know. Yeah. So yeah, thank you for coming on. Is there anything else you want to plug or any information you want to give out? How people can check you out or find you on the social media world or whatever? Do it now, please.
Yeah, sure. I guess just, you know, check out Motor Trend On Demand. There's a whole bunch of great shows, no commercials, and you can watch it at your leisure. So Motor Trend On Demand, it's like $4.99 a month, and but that's kind of a cool thing. It's not just me, but all the other shows on that. And yeah, thanks for watching Barrett Jackson and buying the books and subscribe to magazines. Subscribe.
Yes.
They're cheaper.
In fact, I have my new CarCraft and Hot Rod subscriptions on my desk. I have to send those out to them too.
Cool.
So we'll do that. All right. Steve, thank you very much. We will be in touch soon. We'll get you back on, and thanks for coming on with us. It's a pleasure as always.
Thank you. Have a great Super Bowl Sunday.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And that was
great.
Steve Mignante.
Stuff that just comes pouring out of that guy's head.
I love having him as a guest.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
One of my favorites.
That's why I just sat here and like, agape. I was like, whoa.
I know. All right, let's take a quick late break, and then we'll come back and wrap it, and we'll go from there. Motormouth Radio.
I'll go get the ribbon.
Yeah, ribbon, wrapping. We'll go for foil, whatever you like, Joe. We can do it a number of ways.
Okay. Scotch tape.
Rubber. You can put that rubber suit on. It's in the corner. We can maybe, I'll oil you down. I don't know.
No staples.
No staples. Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino, Joe D. Keep it where you got it. We'll be back in a minute.
Your car not running right? Let the Motormouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Hey, you in the car. Yeah, you. You're a fan of the music of Sly Stone. I know you are. No reason to hide it. You've probably been looking for a radio program that highlights his music. Well, then look no further. Let me introduce myself. I am DJ Solero. That's soul followed by air and an O. Solero. Well, never mind about that. Back to what we're both here to talk about. The Sly Stone Show features the music of Sly through the various artists who have covered and sampled his music, and I'll be playing some of the original music that helped impact a generation. Come on, I know you're looking for some feel-good music, so just keep your radio right here for the Sly Stone Show. And you might want to think about cleaning up your car before we start. This thing is nasty. Oh, back to what's important. It's the Sly Stone Show every Friday afternoon at 3 on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
The Motormouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
And we are back, Kim. Thank you for that intro. Ray Guarino, Joe D, Motormouth Radio, 516-572-7440. Like Kim said, hey, I know we got a caller on the line. I was going to say, I know we got Glenn out there. I wanted to get Glenn back on, but let's do this. We'll push the button and go back and say, hi, you're on with the Motormouths.
You drive a field car?
Oh, yeah, man. Joe? Dennis? The goat man. What's happening?
I wanted to comment really quickly on the model car thing.
Oh, yeah, please do.
I don't know how many guys did this. You remember taking the springs out of the ballpoint pens?
Yeah.
And making
coil
springs for the cars?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they were
black thread for the spark plug wires?
Right. That's when you use the jeweler's loop to get that stuff straight, because that's...
But that's when you discovered you were actually nuts.
Yeah, and you knew you could actually see. Like, now if you tried it, you'd know, oh, my God, I'm blind.
I couldn't do it now with two magnifying glasses.
The closest... Oh, Dennis, how many times have I found myself with my glasses and the magnifying glass? But the closest I've came to that was building...
I just use kids.
Yeah. The closest I came was building the visible V8, and that actually had the... now that seems like hoses compared to the using thread.
Yeah, try and get one of those on eBay now in a mint box.
I know. I think I heard somewhere that they were going to reproduce it, and I don't know if they did or not. But
I think it would be a lost cause, actually.
Yeah, they have to have the visible four cylinders, what it would be. You know?
With the giant tachometer.
Yeah, with a monster tach, right? And,
and
a Ford can muffler.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the coffee can muffler, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, Dennis, do you have any of your old models left still?
And if you're saying old, not cars.
Okay.
I have an artillery piece that I built from Johann, a Civil War caisson and artillery that's probably about 40 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've got, I don't know what they call the Mad Mods, or it's like a surfer girl. It's like really exaggerated, the features and the face and everything.
Uh-huh.
And she's got
that
a surfboard and a, like a seagull.
That's cool.
I think they call them mini mods or surf mods or something.
It sounds like a Frankie Avalon movie or something else.
Yeah, basically. That's all I've got left. I can't tell you how many Red 63 Corvettes I built.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was a great hobby. And you could actually learn because you actually had to put the carburetor on the intake manifold and fan belts and everything, you know.
And you know, and you had to learn how to break those things off the little plastic trees. You had to get the parts off.
You had to have a lot of patience.
Sometimes
with that,
wasn't as easy as it looked, exactly.
Especially the chrome ones, because if you didn't do it right, it would break off and you'd have like a red thing sticking in there.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fun days. Well, Steve takes it to a whole nother level with his stuff, which I always admire what he does.
You got to take this article is fantastic, especially if you used to build models. At one point, you will definitely have flashbacks.
Yeah,
I mean,
I have to take a look at that because that was like one of the greatest things growing up.
Yeah. Yeah,
and somebody taught me a trick many, many years ago.
What's that?
And I tried it on a GTO. You paint your base color, and this, and I'm just going to mention the GTO because the base color was gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once it's painted, you have like a bin or a tub or something that you fill with water, just enough to cover the entire model.
Right,
right.
Put the model down in the water. Now, I'm talking about a gold GTO.
Uh-huh.
Take some black paint and lightly spray the surface.
The surface of the water?
Surface of the water.
Okay.
Okay.
Then you extract the body and you have a tiger gold paint.
Oh, you pull it through the paint.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow, and you've done that actually?
Yes.
Wow, I've never heard of that one. That's a cool trick.
Works, and if you want to go like psychedelic, let's just say for argument's sake, a beetle. You put a beetle in there and spray eight different colors. When you pull it out, you're going to have a psychedelic beetle.
Wow. So you have to have you the top of the water should be fully blackened, I guess, right? It should be
not necessarily. Depends on how much transfer you want.
Okay. Wow. That's really cool.
That's an acquired skill.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, actually, but you just got to remember to have something on the model where you can extract it without putting your hands all over it. Obviously.
You got to be able to, somehow to lift it, right?
Some leftover thread from the spark plug wire.
Exactly.
Somebody else said all you need to do is drill a hole in the bottom of the bowl and let it drain out.
Well, no, but you want to pull it through. It has to come up through the paint.
Pull it
or
through,
it can go down,
some wild effects.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. Hey, that's a great idea. You know, I know it's like I took some airbrush classes. I never became an airbrusher, but
me either.
But I was playing with it, and I learned how to do some lace work, and some of the things were like you take like Saran wrap, mm-hmm. and you would put it on the paint and then lift it, and it makes a pattern that you can't reproduce.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah, there's a lot of cool tricks. Yep. You just got to know the guys. Sounds like Gene taught you that one, I think. I don't know. But that's
Gene never heard of that one.
No, huh? Okay.
No.
Very, very cool. That's good stuff.
Just wanted to mention that model stuff because that really sent a message.
That struck a chord with a lot of people.
Banks,
yep. Yeah. No, that's a great one. I thank you for that. That's a cool thing to remember. Yeah. All right. So you get
all right. Well, I'll see you in your field car someday out in the street there.
You sure will. Maybe driving your mom's car. I don't know. We're going to see. I'll ask you what color it is.
Okay, guys.
All right, then.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
That was Dennis the Goat Man, of course, a good friend of ours for a long time, and looking forward to seeing him again
soon. Fellow ex-modeler.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what we got coming up now that we kind of blew through this here?
Well, just like every week, we don't have anything planned for next week. You know that.
I know, but... I always have to ask you because that's part of my job.
It is, and I don't have anybody in the book right now, and I have to do some. I actually have a couple of feelers out in the water. You know, during the week, that's what I do a lot of. There's a lot of that that happens, and I have a couple feelers out, and now it's maddening. People haven't gotten back to me, so I have to follow back up again. Now, sometimes it may even mean a phone call.
Right.
But, you know, it hasn't happened yet, and then sometimes you have to get closer to the show for people to feel comfortable to commit. I don't know what it
in
is.
In other words, what you got to remember is you don't find Motormouth will find you.
Yeah, pretty much. So I know that right now after the show, I'm going to go down to the shop and take a look at that Chevelle and survey my, you know, my job, as it were.
Yeah, I got to take the lay of the land there.
Yeah, see what I need to do if I, because, you know, I have a set of tools there. But, you know, I always end up bringing other stuff. Like I was telling you before, I brought the, well, we talked about that, right? Did we talk about that on the show? Or did we talk about it in the other room, the rock roll clips for oil deflection?
Well, we did that.
We did talk about it, right?
Yes.
You know, I don't... Gone.
Yeah, I know, CRS.
Anyway, Kim is
not
here.
Corvette Restorer Society, no. Neither.
Kim is here. Stay tuned for Best of Thunder Road. For Joe D. Ray Guarino, we'll be back next week and do it all again. We'll see you then.
Adios.
Bye.